Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And we are assembled here today to discuss the week's technology news, or at least riff off it to a large extent.
Yeah. It hasn't been a great week, has it?
That's been the running theme, I think, of the last, I don't know, month, couple of months.
It does feel like, I was looking at the, I think you did a bang up job, by the way, of story selection.
Did I?
Because when I was looking, I was like, don't know what the hell we're going to talk about this week. It's just nothing going on.
No. Well, I scoured the week.
That might become apparent, though, as we go through the show.
No, I think this, I think we've got some great stuff to talk about this week. I do apologize in advance. We are going to talk about Elon Musk, but I can almost guarantee that the references to the Musk, the elongated muskrat, will be fairly brief. So that's okay. I did think we should open with a bit of feedback we had coming from James. Do you remember last week we did briefly touch on the Member of Parliament who watched pornography in the Commons? And we did wonder how you accidentally stumble across pornography when reading about tractors. Well, we had this email come in that I think the subject line was just something like tractors. And there was no real body to the email other than one paragraph without any explanation or context. So I'm going to read it verbatim. This came in from James. And this, there's no hello. There's no anything. It's just the following. Bob goes to see his friend Pete. He finds Pete in his barn, dancing naked around his farming machinery. "What are you doing?" asks Bob. Pete stops dancing and says, "My wife has been ignoring me lately. So I talked to my psychiatrist, and he said I needed to do something sexy to attract her." That's it.
Very good.
So I feel like we have truly inspired our listeners to be creative in their correspondence and send us fan fiction, essentially.
Almost like the sort of nonsense that a certain culture secretary likes to write in her spare time.
Some of her books are on Audible. I've never bought one, but...
Oh, I would please beg of you not to.
Okay.
We don't want to fund her or in any way encourage her.
Mm. She did come up on Have I Got News For You this week, I have to say, as in mockery of her about Channel 5 being privatised.
I was going to say, so someone sick on screen.
Pointing out that it was never privatised because it was never a public company. Government-owned, public-owned, rather.
Yes.
But anyway, let's talk about someone slightly less irritating. Engadget wrote this week that Elon Musk's $44 billion Twitter acquisition, which hasn't actually been finalised yet, let's not forget, isn't done, but MPs in the UK are already inviting him to discuss the changes he wants to implement for the website. Engadget calls it a website. Is Twitter a website?
I mean, yes.
It has a website, but is it a website?
I would say it is a website. I would say it is very much a website.
Okay, very well. Well, the fact is, there is a letter sent to Mr. Musk, and I have a copy of the letter sent by Julian Knight, and I thought, it's not very long, I thought I'd read this in full. It makes it's quite interesting to hear what he has to say. Here's the letter as sent on the 29th of April. "Dear Mr. Musk, I chair the UK House of Commons Digital Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee, a parliamentary cross-party group of MPs that investigates new developments and scrutinises government policymaking in these sectors." I mean, that's a strong intro. That's a strong intro right there. My committee has noted your proposed acquisition of Twitter, and we are interested in the developments you propose. A bit of a word echo there. Propose used twice in the same sentence. Wouldn't have advised that from our culture secretary, but that's okay. In particular, your intention to roll out verification for all users echoes our calls on the UK government as part of proposed legislation, which we hope will restore the UK's public trust in digital platforms. Our 2020 report on misinformation in the COVID infodemic, put that in quotes, which is helpful, called for greater transparency of bots and automated and spam accounts, whilst our recent report on the UK's online safety bill discussed ways to balance civil liberties like freedom of expression with the need to tackle pernicious, pervasive online child sexual exploitation and abuse. I therefore wish to take this opportunity to invite you to speak before our committee and discuss your proposals in more depth. I know you have expressed your wish that critics remain on Twitter, and this may present an opportunity to address any critiques in public. I look forward to hearing your response and discussing your plans for the future of Twitter in committee in the near future. Yours sincerely, Julian Knight. Now, Ian, before I was about to call you Morris, not quite sure how that happened, but Ian.
Yeah, you can call me Morris if you want.
Mr. Morris. Do you think Elon Musk is going to show up?
No.
No, neither do I.
Why would he?
Because he likes attention.
He does like attention, yeah.
And he'd certainly get plenty of it doing this. But whether it's the right form of attention is another question, because we have discussed many of these committee hearings, none of which are in any way legally binding, or mandatory, or you could very easily just ignore them. And certainly many people have, most notably, I think we can recall, Mark Zuckerberg, when the previous incarnation of this committee wanted him to come and answer their questions about Cambridge Analytica. And companies routinely get invited to participate via their executives in these panels. I cover a lot of them at Bloomberg, and they're frequently quite dull, just because they do go on for quite a lot of time, and they are, I don't want to say they're scripted in terms of their responses, but most of the executives that appear on these that are quite senior, they're very much towing the company line. They're not very insightful or honest. They are just parroting what they're told to parrot, and the intrigue comes from when they diverge from their script or say something that maybe they were trying to avoid saying. But certainly they're not compulsory to appear, the executives invited, that is. So whether or not this is something of a phantom invite, we still have to wait and see. But I do think it would be very interesting if he did come. And there is part of me, a very small part, that does wonder, actually, if he would do it, depending on whether any of these, whether this takeover was in the line of sights of regulators who might suggest this isn't a good idea, in which case appearing and talking about all the wonderful good you're going to do with this company, if that is indeed what he intends to do with it, that might be an interesting way of silencing those critics and getting a deal, get a bit of support for it.
I don't think there's going to be any criticism of his takeover, honestly. I don't think it doesn't fall under a regulatory concern as far as I can tell. It's not like he also owns Facebook. It feels like one of those things where there's not really anything anyone's going to say, especially not in the UK or EU, where it's very unlikely that there would be any objection at all. So I don't think he's going to feel forced to appear. He might do, because he does have an ego that he needs to satiate, but I don't really see what it would achieve, honestly. I mean, he's going to make his sort of general feelings on it so publicly available anyway, that he's not going to go to Parliament and tell them anything that isn't already out there. These always feel to me like MPs just trying to seem relevant and like get people in who like are in the zeitgeist, as it were, you know, rather than actually doing any meaningful good at all. Obviously that's not true in Facebook's case, but then we saw what happened with that. Mark Zuckerberg didn't come, and we've got no way to compel him to do so. I think the only way you could ever do it was to say, Ronnie, unless you appear, we're going to shut off access to your service in our country.
But no, they couldn't.
That would be a...
They couldn't. I don't think they could do that either. What they could have done to Zuckerberg, and if I recall, I think Damien Collins did threaten this at one point, which is that if he ever set foot on UK soil, he'd be issued a summons and forced to appear. And
but would you be able to do that? Like, I mean, yeah. If you issued someone a summons, could they not just leave the country?
I don't know. There was a risk of being locked up in a bell tower based on some law, like if you're compelled to appear and refuse.
Well, yeah, I mean, if he was served, then I don't know how it would fall. I mean, yes, you could serve him and then he'd be legally required to appear, but what would you be able to do about it? Apart from arresting him if he ever came back, sure, you could do that. But
he couldn't be arrested. This is the thing. He couldn't be arrested because he's not committed a crime.
Well, no, but if he didn't appear on a summons, then he could be arrested after that.
Oh, well.
But then he'd have to come back. I don't even know if he ever comes to the UK, to be honest.
I don't know if he's been at all since...
I don't think he leaves the US at all, does he, really?
Doesn't seem to. Well,
he bought a huge chunk of Hawaii, so he doesn't actually have to leave anywhere.
Well, I think he went to the EU. He went to Brussels when he did that hearing. I think he does travel a little bit, but I think we'd know if he'd been here recently.
Yes,
I honestly think Damien Collins is so much of his foe that if he'd have heard that he was going to come to Britain,
he'd have done a publicity serving or something.
He'd have done something.
I don't even know how you'd get that approved. I really don't. I mean, maybe you can, but who knows? I'm not a government law expert. But anyway, I don't think Musk comes here that often. I think Musk, and probably rightly, just ignores the UK. Like we would have been a good place to set up a gigafactory. So, you know, build Teslas that they sell to quite a lot of Teslas here and in the EU. Obviously, the UK is no longer the ideal choice for someone selling in the EU, but you know, there are advantages to being here. Good engineering expertise generally, and quite a lot of, you know, smallish car manufacturers. But he seems to pretty much ignore the UK. So who knows? That was even on his radar. I probably doesn't even know it's happened.
A lot of these hearings take place remotely. They don't have to be done in person. And in fact, a lot of them do, obviously, particularly during the pandemic. But a lot of these things, they appear remotely. And there is good that comes from these hearings. And what they're used for people who don't know, is they will give evidence as part of these hearings. And then the committee will produce a document that outlines what they have learnt as part of their hearings, and then prepare recommendations which are given to government, which then goes into informing new laws or changes to existing laws. So it's not that they're pointless. It's more that they are relatively far removed from any immediate legislative impact, let's say. And
yeah.
But often news does come out of these things, and I've covered quite a lot of these, and they can get quite heated. And I've watched a lot of the ones in the US, I've watched a lot of the ones that take place in Brussels, and I've worked on hearings that have happened in other countries in different languages when I've been when we've had reporters out there at Bloomberg, not on text message. And without exception, the UKs are the most heated. I mean, they almost get angry and get yelled at, and in fact sometimes they have been yelled at and properly dragged in front, like a teacher pulling you up for saying a swear word in school or doing something and forcing you to answer in front of your classmates. They can be riveting. They are routinely and regularly very, very dull indeed, but they can be very exciting.
I've seen a few of them that have been good. I mean, I really enjoyed the Leveson inquiry back in the day. I mean, that's not quite the same thing.
Yeah.
But that had a lot of really good people speaking who did so eloquently and interestingly.
A good one recently was the boss of P&O Ferries.
Yeah.
Where he was getting grilled for basically asked, did you deliberately break the law, when deciding not to consult with trade unions about cutting jobs? And he sort of admitted that well, we didn't think we were going to get what we wanted, so we just didn't bother. And when you say something like that in front of one of these hearings, you tend not to get away with it. It tends to become a headline, certainly in the tabloids, but they can routinely reveal a lot about an executive's character, and that could be difficult for them. So I do kind of hope that he would do it. I'm with you, and I don't think he will. But if you look at the UK, has some interesting views on having a spaceport, particularly up in Scotland, for instance, and we have SpaceX, and we do have electric cars in Britain, we do have Teslas. I do think there's a lot that could be raised as part of a hearing about Twitter, but
yeah,
who knows? As far as we're aware, no response given. And
I don't even know if this Twitter acquisition is going to go ahead now. I don't know. I kind of feel like it just feels weird.
I think it will.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it will, because there's also a hell of a lot riding on it. Like, there's a lot of money going to have to change hands if it doesn't. Like, $1 billion.
Yes,
dollars
it's
or
like
something.
Yeah. There's a quite big, a, there's
quite a significant,
not a huge amount for Elon to pay though.
He'd lose a lot.
I mean, you'd sweat a billion. Even a billionaire would be sweating bullets at the thought of losing $1 billion.
Not convinced, because I think he's dead serious. Anyway, yeah,
he may well be. I just think it's a terrible business decision beyond anything else. But
I look forward to hearing whether he shows up. If you have any views on this, of course, do let us know. hello@uktechshow.com.
Oh, well, the government's back at it again with the tech legislation, Nate.
There's a theme today, week, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a theme. Sorry, everybody. This week, they're taking aim at the world of fake reviews, which I guess is a good thing. If successful, the legislation will prevent businesses paying someone to write or host fake reviews. That sounds great, but is it really workable? A huge percentage of this kind of fake reviews are almost certainly coming from the shadiest parts of the internet. Those products imported from China at minimal cost and then sold through Facebook and TikTok for very low prices. Tracking those companies down, I think, will be an absolute mission. Of course, if larger companies are found to be indulging, then that would be easy to actually punish. But would any reputable brand attempt that? In its story, The Guardian quotes Consumer Minister Paul Scully. No longer will you visit a 5-star reviewed restaurant only to find a burnt lasagna or get caught in a subscription to which there is no end in sight. Consumers deserve better, and the majority of businesses out there doing the right thing deserve protection from rogue traders undermining them. And he mentioned it in that quote, but the more interesting part of these proposals is that they're also going to ensure that customers are reminded when a trial subscription is ending, giving them a chance to end without being charged. That's something I could get behind. And I also think that would be a far easier thing to report and punish, I think.
Yeah. Plus, I know you have noted here, and Nick in our live chat notes that Amazon's planning on taking action against some
yes.
of these companies that facilitate the reviews, essentially acting as middlemen.
Although those companies are not necessarily fake reviews, are they? I mean, they're unethical, I would say, but they're not necessarily, you know, they send people products, they review the products, they get paid a small amount for each review.
Yeah.
You know, that might not necessarily be fake as such. I don't know. Maybe their requirements are you must give it 5 stars, in which case, yes, it is fake. But, you know, it seems to me to be something that I can understand why Amazon's irked by it, but Amazon's reviews are garbage, and we've talked about it before.
We have.
I have absolutely no faith in them. They're complete trash.
I never trust a 5-star review. I never trust a 1-star review. I only trust 2, 3, and 4-star reviews exclusively. Because
well, I don't even know if I'd agree with that. I just think the problem with Amazon reviews tends to be that you go there and you'll see like 5 stars perfect or whatever, 1 star didn't work at all, and then a bunch in the middle. And it's like, well, probably the person who didn't like it either just bought the wrong thing or it was a defective product or something. It just doesn't help, I don't think.
Well, we've been discussing this at home, actually, because Kate recently bought a set of like a knife thing for cutting clay. She was making some stuff with clay and does what, to be fair to her, she does a lot and often buys something that's a bit cheap and then complains about it and then buys a slightly more expensive one and wishes she'd done it that way in the first place. And she went to the extent of leaving a review to express a very carefully worded criticism for why this particular product was terrible. And I thought, well, that's a good thing to do. And I also thought, well, I hope people pay attention to that and read it. Then we talked about it again when we were thinking about buying a new sideboard for our spare bedroom, because I said, I don't want to buy anything that's flat packed. I only want to buy something that's solid and comes delivered in one piece.
Yeah.
And Kate pointed out that you can get some perfectly good high-end flat packed stuff. And then we're looking at the reviews on a couple of websites, and she was dismissing all the reviews that were low, that were about being hard to put together. She's like, you can ignore them. None of these products are hard to put together. These are just stupid people. So ignore those.
I'm inclined to agree with that.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't that hard. I mean, like, even IKEA stuff, if you follow the instructions, is not that difficult. It's just there's a lot of steps and people get bored.
Yeah. And then the third reason this came up, which isn't something we've specifically talked about, is we're in the early stages of getting recommendations for a new kitchen to be installed. And I got my shortlist down to 5 kitchen fitters. And only included ones that were part of the Which Trusted Traders or something. Because when you're buying a kitchen, you know, it's an investment. It's a lot of money. Yeah. And to me, the value there in a kitchen is enormous. And then I really trust those reviews more so than anything else at all. So having a law, or potentially having a new law that goes some way to preventing or at least, as you described, take aim at fake reviews or manipulated reviews, I could not be more pleased to hear. And I just hope that it turns out to be something well implemented after careful consideration and not a hack job, as we've seen with several bits of legislation over recent years.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate any of this. Interestingly for me, you know what I'm like when it comes to government legislation. I tend to be a bit, oh, what's the point? And I kind of am in a bit, but I also don't think this is necessarily going to cause problems. I think I worry a little bit that it might be misused. I can see the potential for misuse, but at the same time, like, yeah, it all seems to be quite well-meaning. I, like anyone, would be very happy to see the back of any kind of review fakery, frankly. Yeah.
Well, there's a line in this Guardian story, and we'll link to the full piece as ever at uktechshow.com/episodes. The line is, if the plans pass into law, the Competition and Markets Authority will be able to enforce consumer law directly and will have the power to fine businesses up to 10% of their global turnover for mistreating their customers. So that is not an insignificant amount of money. And previously, if you wanted to go after a company for having misleading reviews, you have to take them to court, which is lengthy, potentially very expensive.
And someone has to pay for it.
Yeah. So the idea is essentially that it's making complaining much, much more accessible and punishment much more visible as a threat. And therefore, the deterrent is greater, which should be good.
I must admit, I haven't read the full legislation proposal. The one thing I'd like to see tackled more stringently are these fake reviews or fake products using celebrities on Facebook. You know, Martin Lewis, money saving expert, suffers this all the time, where he's tied to like a Bitcoin scam or something, and there doesn't seem to be any particularly powerful legislation stopping that. But by the same virtue, you see a lot of those fake news report things. When I worked at the Mirror, I noticed there were a lot of them using the Mirror's basic look, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? Like, why are lawyers not all over this? But it just seems like they're too hard to squash. And again, I feel like this could be the same issue. You know, the big companies are going to be very reluctant to ever engage in fake reviews, and you know, little companies who set up to sell one product for sort of a month while they get rid of their stock, then disband the company and set up a new company, they're going to be uncatchable. And I think the stated example is you go to a five-star restaurant only to discover a burnt lasagna. Well, there's already consumer protection for people that go to restaurants. If you go to a restaurant and receive poor quality food, you're not under any obligation to pay for it. All you do is you say, right, well, I'm sorry, I felt that meal was completely substandard. I will give you this amount of money that I consider it to be worth, anything from, you know, a quid up, and here's my name and address, and you can write to me if you feel like that's unjustifiable. But that is a law.
Well, Nick makes a comment in the chat. He says, I once put up a poor review, and the company concerned got a lot of people to downvote it on Amazon. So that facility's been removed.
I wonder that, because you all know that's what I've been banned from reviewing Amazon on Amazon.
Yeah,
that could be it. It's annoying,
but that's
Amazon's not interested in good in any sort of meaningful reviews. I hate them.
I know you hate them and you have a problem with them, and that's probably well founded.
Feel attacked. That's the problem.
Why?
Because I'm an honest and I use integrity in my reviews. I don't just jump on and go one star. Very good product overall, but £1 too expensive. You know, I'm the sort of person that... Well, I was a professional reviewer, for God's sakes. If I can't be trusted to give a review of something objectively, or at least as objectively as anyone who's purchased a product can be trusted, you know, I'm surely the person, or at least one of the people. I mean, there's lots of reviewers in the world. But you know what I'm saying, right? I feel like I felt attacked, as if I was untrustworthy. And that is, I would say that's almost a libel against me. And I should sue Amazon, I think. I might do that.
Okay.
You've libeled me in your actions. Can you libel someone that way?
No.
Because they're basically saying that they don't trust me.
Yeah. And it's in their interest not to trust you. A company. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, there are some other interesting comments that came up while we've been talking about this. Mike asks, by disregarding 5-star and 1-star reviews, do you worry you're missing out on many genuine reviews? Do I worry about it? No. Do I think I am? Yes, definitely. But I feel that a well-explained 2-star review is more useful to me than a ranty 1-star review that Ian types with his fists and head. Well, I feel like that was a fairly decent tangent from what was ostensibly quite an interesting topic. You're well within your rights to disagree. Why not post us a review? 2 stars with good grammar, at the very least. 5 stars with absolutely no grammar or punctuation or attention paid to form or sentence. hello@uktechshow.com. And to celebrate, I'm going to play some music. Here it comes. Well, I'd like to just take a minute while Ian giggles to himself about
that. Really tickled me.
About something. What's tickled you?
It was you. It was you going up to celebrate. I'm going to play some music. Here it is. It was brilliant. Oh, it made me laugh.
Thanks, mate. I love tickling you. Prefer doing it in person, though. Nude. Anyway, I want to take this rather filthy opportunity to thank some of our patrons, including James Carroll, DW, Carl Jakeman, Alex McQuilkin, some longtime patrons there, Neil Fisher, Hangdog, there's loads of them. You can join them and get the full version of the show ad-free. Join our live audience like Gutherman's doing right now. We've got Luna, Mike, Nick, John, Kate, another Rich. We had another Rich earlier. It's riches. It's wall-to-wall riches. And I mean that both literally and figuratively. We are a very wealthy group of people here, and our currency is love and respect. That's what it is. And if you want to be part of that, go to patreon.com/UK Tech. If you're one of those lovely, beautiful patrons, then you're about to hear this week's third discussion story, all about adventures in to-do list management and how to get things done. And
I'm looking forward to this.
I bet you are, Ian. And here it comes with a bit more music to celebrate. Well, Ian, How far on the edge of your seat are you sitting?
I would say my bottom is around 75% forward on the seat.
Right, okay.
There's 25% between the end of my bottom and the back of the seat.
That is an appropriate level of comfort to have, because we're about to hear from Tom Merritt, who's going to tell you all the things that he's been on the edge of his seat for while talking about the week in global tech news.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, should you trust mental health apps? I can already hear Ian saying no. So how about which mental health apps might be trustworthy and how to tell? Plus, why Spotify created an island in Roblox. The other things we need to focus on regarding AI ethics that aren't bias. Not that bias isn't important. Our passwordless future is really here if websites want it. And how 3D scanning is preserving the world's history. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
He's not wrong.
Man knows me well.
He does, yeah. Scary, isn't it?
yeah, a bit, yeah.
Yeah, passwordless future. There's a lot of stuff been talked about that. I did consider talking about that as well, but I thought they covered it pretty well this week. Apple and Microsoft and Google issued a joint press release, basically, announcing they were going to beef up their commitment to a passwordless future, which I thought was rather interesting. Well, that's at dailytechnewsshow.com. Thank you, Tom, very much. Thank you to all of our live listeners and our patrons and our free listeners. We love, love, love our free listeners because they are the majority of the listeners and they leave us reviews. And if you'd love to leave us a review, trust me, we would love you to, as long as it is an honest review. It can be 2 stars, but if you're going to leave a really bad one, make it a 1 star and spell it badly, because that way people will know that you're a cretin and don't have a valid opinion. But whatever your thoughts are, do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really massively helps Ian and I, and we are eternally grateful, all jokes aside, aren't we, Ian?
Gives us a little lift.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. For some reason, the music just restarted playing in my ears. So should we just pretend this is our outro music? And I'll just manually fade it up. See you next week, Ian.
See you next week, Nate.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.